P-85. Fiori Frontieri Global Headquarters, Colorado Springs, Colorado. For most of the morning, the frustration in Alessandro Bonucci's mind as he waited for any kind of update from Birchwood as to what was going on had been acute but relatively manageable. The clocks ticking over into the afternoon flicked something of a mental switch, however, and for the past few hours, his frustration had become so tangible that it was physically symptomatic. From twitches in his leg to an entirely uncharacteristic nervous tic affecting his right eye, the young astronomer and reliable polymath among Dan McCarthy's trusted inner circle was so on edge that his boss and friend Timo had offered to call for a doctor. Knowing about the gate and Dan's attempt to cross it, but having no way of helping or even staying in the loop, was undoubtedly worse than not knowing, and Alessandro's discomfort was such that he likely would have accepted the offer of a medical check were it not for his fear of revealing something he wasn't supposed to. When the phone on his desk rang, Alessandro's instinct was to leave it. The call was coming in to the landline, though. Not his own phone, which he would all but certainly have ignored unless the caller was a known and trusted contact, so he turned his head to glance at the portable headset's screen. The caller wasn't known, but a small blue and white flag on the left side of the screen immediately caught his eye. The call was coming from Argentina. Unthinkingly, he picked up.
Hello?
Alessandro, the voice on the other end of the line asked. This one word was enough for Alessandro to recognize its owner just as quickly.
Mesut, he replied. What's happening?
You tell me, said the Egyptian archaeologist. When did you leave Buenos Aires? How did you get to Colorado so fast, unless...
The young Italian hesitated.
Let's not dwell on that.
But you are in Colorado. That part is very important, Alessandro. The number wasn't redirected, was it? You're not still somewhere in this hotel. If you are, we have to meet. If you're not, I'm not,
Alessandro cut in, confirming this rather than admitting it to someone he considered very much on the right side of things.
Not at the Buenos Aires Gravesen, I mean. I'm at Fiori Frontieri. I guess it goes without saying that a lot has happened since we were sitting in that room and Godfrey disappeared.
Mesut breathed heavily down the phone.
Do you know where Godfrey is? Is he okay? And why hasn't Dan or Tara shown up since yesterday? Did the messengers take them too? Not to mention Billy. I can't get hold of him, and the hotel in Ankara said he wasn't at dinner or breakfast. I called to check, because he was who I really wanted to reach first.
About what?
Alessandro asked, suddenly feeling uneasy. He didn't doubt Mesut's goodness for a moment. But goodness was easily manipulated, and it seemed more than possible that the Egyptian was perhaps being forced to call and ask certain questions under duress while someone else listened in.
What do you need, Mesut? What do you want?
Can I speak to Timo?
The Egyptian asked very plainly.
I wasn't calling about Godfrey or anything like that. I just need to talk to Timo.
Made even more uneasy by this awkward shift in the conversation, Alessandro considered his options. With Timo just next door and clearly in charge of operations, Alessandro opted to grant Mesut's request, or at least to give his boss the opportunity to grant it.
Hold on, he said.
Alessandro didn't hear Mesut's grateful words of thanks as he carried the phone to Timo's door, holding it against his chest.
It's Mesut Demir.
He mouthed on arrival after walking in with two knocks to announce his presence.
He's being weird. He already knows I'm here, but I don't know if you should give too much away. Someone might have gotten to him.
So surprised both that Mesut Demir was calling and that Alessandro thought he was being weird, it took Timo a few seconds to invite Alessandro all the way over to his desk with a brisk come hither hand gesture. Timo then took hold of the phone in preparation to very cautiously converse with Mesut, the man who had served as lead archaeologist at the Dortlu Tepe site, discovered and excavated using equipment provided by Timo's No Strings funding and overseen by Billy Kendrick. Mesut had sat quietly in a jail cell with Billy after showing him the pillars and their remarkable carvings for the first time, so from Timo's perspective, he had a lot of credit in the bank. Alessandro's judgment and instincts were always worth considering, however, and the young man's assertion that Masut was being weird lay behind Timo's carefulness as he raised the phone towards his face to speak.
Masut, the amiable billionaire said. He switched the phone into speaker mode so that Alessandro would hear every reply too, in a move the younger man quietly but greatly appreciated.
I can't reach Billy and it's all gone, Masut blurted out without another moment's hesitation. Timo, it's all gone.
Just as quickly as Masut delivered this news, Timo Fiori gulped. The context of who was calling was more than enough to tell him what exactly was gone, and the possible culprits and consequences were already running through his mind like greyhounds out of the traps. Alessandro, standing at his boss's side, felt his spine stiffen.
Dorlutepe?
Timo asked, keen to be explicitly clear but not holding out any real hope that Masut would respond with anything but a firm yes.
Masut, are you telling me that someone has stolen the images and footage from the dig site?
I'm sorry, Masut sighed, his words shallow and breathy. They were locked in the safe, along with my other valuables, and nothing else was taken. Whoever did this was looking for one thing, and they found it. Timo, they have it. I've been trying to liaise with hotel security all day to view footage from outside my room, or even inside if there is any secret surveillance on these VIP floors, but they say the footage isn't there. The floor was closed last night for a supposed security threat and everything was swept, so I'm absolutely sure this was an inside job.
But that's Godfrey's hotel, Timo groaned.
He didn't and couldn't blame Masut, who had kept the images in his safe exactly as he was supposed to, and who had brought them to Buenos Aires in the hope of sharing them with other world leaders so they could decide together how best to safely proceed with the business of making the remarkable discovery public. The revelation that intelligent aliens had walked on Earth and made direct contact with humans long before the messengers had would be an explosive one at any time. But Timo couldn't shake the feeling that dropping it on a world dealing with everything that was already happening at the moment would be like dropping a lit match into a box of dynamite. Timo didn't even waste any time hoping that whoever had come to possess the images might mean well, because people who meant well didn't tend to call in hoaxed threats at VIP hotels and arrange thefts from a resident's locked safe. All Timo could hope for, realistically, was that whoever now held the images was motivated by a desire to repress the discovery and its public revelation, rather than to further destabilize the world by recklessly leaking it to the media. The notion that it was Godfrey's hotel, figuratively, if not quite literally, given the amount of business his various Buenos Aires-based gatherings had brought the Gravesen in recent years, was one with a meaningful basis in reality. This week, as in several others in recent times, Godfrey's ICA had booked out the whole of the enormous building. The in-house security operatives were not under his direct control, which was something the Gravesen had been unable to budge on for what management stressed were unshakable conditions of their corporate insurance policies, and Masut's story made Timo think that this must have been where the weak link had been found. As was the case when the building in which Timo now stood had been the scene of a cowardly terrorist attack that almost claimed his life, as well as Emma Ford's, it sounded again as though a single corruptible security officer was all it had taken to undo a large organization's best-laid plans. This was why people like Clark McCarthy were so valuable, Timo considered. Why he had been paid what would seem to many like crazy amounts of money to protect high-value individuals in some of Iraq's most unstable regions during his time in private security after being reluctantly discharged from military duty on medical grounds. Godfrey himself had taken certain unusual steps in building the new ICA security force, and for deeper reasons than some thought. The chairman's decision to recruit an all-male unit of young Latin Americans, all from military families, who met stringent fitness requirements, but also certain seemingly subjective appearance requirements, square jaws and strong brows, as he put it, had been designed not only to strike fear into would-be rabble-rousers or troublemakers, but also to assist in developing a siege mentality among the young men. In stripping away their individuality in a militaristic fashion and encouraging them to keep close tabs on their brothers, and to take matters into their own hands if any appeared to be anything but 100% committed to the task of serving what all were taught to consider as their planet's most important building and institution, Godfrey had taken steps to develop a self-regulating group. The Buenos Aires Gravesen, by the sound of it, could have done with a tighter-knit force of its own, Timo considered, if perhaps not necessarily one that went to the restrictive extremes of Godfrey's.
It only takes one bad egg, Masut lamented, and I suppose one of the two things we want to think about now is who exactly was the chef who knowingly put this bad egg in the pot? Who served it up?
What's the second thing, to your mind? Timo asked. The other thing we have to think about. I think I have an idea, but to be sure.
I think we have to think about getting this out there the right way, Masut said. Like I was going to discuss with Godfrey, before whoever has it in their hands thinks about putting it out there the wrong way. We don't want another Il Diavolo on our hands.
Timo nodded and glanced at Alessandro. The young astronomer had been that colossal comet's discoverer, humbly allowing his senior colleagues to claim the dubious credit as it became officially known as Comet Conte Abate. And he had been more disgusted than anyone by the way John Cole had leaked its course to the press in London. Cole was in Buenos Aires, as all three men knew only too well, but had so far avoided mentioning out loud, and he had been staying at the Gravesen along with just about every other major world leader. It certainly wasn't beyond Cole in an ethical sense to invite chaos by irresponsibly revealing something sensitive in a deliberately provocative way, as the Il Diavolo case so perfectly illustrated, and if the images were in his hands, it struck the three men who suspected as much that it was only too likely the rest of the world would be gazing upon them before long. That the beings known by the messengers and looped in humans as architects had visited Earth in the distant past wasn't something that would automatically and inevitably be seen as a negative without commentary that made it seem frightening, particularly since no one outside of Dan McCarthy's inner circle had reason to consider the architects as a devious and dangerous race, since they had no idea of either the extensive deceit they had conducted on New Kerguelen, or indeed their suspicions of humanity, which lay behind it all in the first place. Cole couldn't possibly know all of that, Timo and the others felt sure, since it was carefully protected knowledge only ever known by a tiny handful of people and never written down or recorded anywhere. What could be just as damaging, though, would be a sensationalist expose of the carvings that showed an architect physically connected to ancient humans by a cable-based communications system that would look familiar to everyone. So familiar were the almost identical scenes from the Birchwood drive-in on Contact Day. Recalling the fear that had spread across the world after the initial revelation of Richard Walker's hoaxed plaques, and bearing in mind how bad the situation already was today following Godfrey's disappearance, no one could bear the thought of things getting any worse. Indeed, so rapid had been the breakdown of order in some parts of the world, the three men might have struggled to even imagine what worse could look like. Perhaps most damaging of all would be the suggestion that Godfrey and Dan, currently absent from public life and unable to make any counter-arguments in their own defense, had kept these important discoveries from the world for their own selfish reasons. If Cole did have the images, as the men were by now considering only too likely, this would quite possibly be the angle he took. Similar thoughts grew and circled in all three of their minds, not coincidentally, but rather because they knew of the devious Prime Minister's penchant for this kind of political recklessness better than they would like.
If it's Cole, we have to tell Emma so that we at least have a shot at managing this before he throws the grenade and runs for cover, Masut said. I didn't have a direct contact, but—
You're right, Timo said. Masut, I'll call again soon. Thank you. Don't answer calls from anyone else unless it's one of us, okay? Keep your guard up, my friend, and do not blame yourself for any of this.
Timo ended the call there, saving Masut the trouble of a goodbye and removing any possibility of an unnecessary apology.
I know Clark told us very strongly that we shouldn't call anyone in Birchwood until he got back in touch with us, Timo went on, now talking directly and solely to Alessandro.
The young man nodded ruefully and finished the thought. But Clark sure as hell didn't expect this.